Alright, it's time for a DoNotGod.com video presentation. Continuation, part 2. Okay, playing a Sabim Hassenfelder video on the subject of how much do we owe the future? I'd say we owe them everything. Yeah, frankly. Yes. There's just no doubt about the fact that tomorrow is going to live on today, and if we fix today, then tomorrow won't have to fix yesterday, kind of thing, which it can't do. So we have to do it for it ahead of time, because it can't fix yesterday, just like we can't fix the mistakes our past has made.
It's an exclusively Oxford endeavor. The Americans have a similar think tank in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Okay, whatever. There's Americans and Oxfordians and whatever. Who fucking cares? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, the whole world is made out of a bunch of agendas. Okay? Organizations with agendas. Yuck.
Massachusetts called the Future of Life Institute. It's supported, among others, by...
And what institute is paying you, right? There's some silly fucking institute sucking up some sort of money from some foundation or some other kind of bullshit that's just wasting resources on some pie-in-the-sky bullshit.
Billionaires Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, and Jan Tallon, who have expressed their sympathy for long-termist thinking. Musk, for example, recently commented that Mac Askill's book is a close match for his philosophy.
I don't know what's in the book, but the story that there's just math to do, and it's pretty simple that, everything's made out of its foundation. And we're the foundation for the future. And if there's obviously flaws in how we're functioning, we should fix those flaws so the future doesn't end up a Leaning Tower of Pisa or something. We don't want it to be a bridge that collapses. Duh.
So, in a nutshell, long-termists say that the current conditions of our living don't play a big role and a few million deaths are acceptable.
Well, whatever. I think they're saying something a little more serious than that. That, again, the future is depending on us. And the past has let us down in terms of not fixing things like world wars and all that kind of crap by not really taking some United Nations thing seriously. All of the kind of mistakes where a little better, they did a little better, we would be better off. If they did a little better than exploiting all the third world countries and instead did something to civilize them instead. And civilize them not by giving them religion, but by giving them understanding and education.
So long as we don't go extinct. Not everyone is a fan of long-termism. I can't think of a reason why. I mean, the last time a self-declared intellectual elite said it's okay to sacrifice a million people for the greater good, only thing that happened was a world war. Just
I don't think he said that. So again, to call Hitler the elite or something, it's more bullshit. But whatever. He was a boorish war veteran. Hardly from the intellectual elite. He wasn't a billionaire either. So again, these whole descriptions that, somehow this is the same parallel as the crude racism of Hitler is really fucking bullshit as an argument. You can't do better than that. You have to actually argue with an intelligent counter argument. And what's your intelligent argument? Oh, if the future thinks it owes me something, let it send me an invoice.
We
could just say that the last 80 years where we've taken half the black crap in the ground and shoved it into the atmosphere was a pretty big stupid mistake and that we should have taken some responsibility.
Step for mankind. But some people have criticized long-termists. For example, the Australian philosopher Peter Singer.
Yeah, another just a stupid hypocrite I care, but I don't really care. I think nature's working just fine. It always slaughters all the animals all over the place. I mean, the worst meat grinder possible. He thinks humans are doing something worse than nature's doing. He's not even smart enough to figure out that the raw numbers say that nature is the biggest Hitler there is. Nature's the cruelest motherfucker you could find. So there's nothing about it that's actually defendable.
He's one of the founders of the effective altruism movement, and he isn't pleased that his followers are flocking over to long-termism.
Well, because it's a lot more convenient, I guess, just in some respects, because none of the investments, I guess, are going to be personal ones. I don't know. I don't have to personally sacrifice anything. I just support electric cars that really don't solve any problems.
In a 2015 book titled The Most Good You Can Do, he writes, "To refer to donating to help the global poor or reduce animal suffering as a feel-good project on which resources are frittered away is harsh language. It no doubt reflects Bostrom's."
So, it is in fact a fact, though, that it is a fritter, okay, when you spend resources not curing a problem. So, again, you could argue that we frittered away a hell of a lot of resources on welfare when if we would have spent the money on ensuring that the children of the welfare whores didn't replicate their behavior, didn't learn from their parents. If we would have built the perfect orphanages or something instead, if we didn't allow people to blackmail us with their children, I mean, all these kind of arguments could be made that we'd be far better off now. Far better off.
Frustration that existential risk reduction is not receiving the attention it should have on the basis of its expected utility.
So, who even knows what the fuck that even means? Okay, the existential risk reduction. And what's the existential word doing in there? It's risk reduction. I mean, it doesn't need any existential clarification or making it more specific to something. Any risk reduction is good as long as it's economical.
Using such language is nevertheless likely to be counterproductive. We need to encourage more people to be effective altruists.
Yeah, well, again, and effective by your definition of a proper outcome. So again, it's all about what the outcome should be. And the simple answer in most cases is extermination, frankly. That's the simple good outcome where now you've prevented any problem that could possibly occur. So if there's too many, if poor people are a problem, well, let's get rid of poor. And the easiest way to get rid of it is not to subsidize it, frankly.
And causes like helping the global poor are more likely to draw people towards thinking and acting as effective.
Why would it do that? Because every effort you make to helping the global poor, all right, will end up in the same frustration that exists now. The global poor will just use the money to make babies. So whatever resource, whatever advancement you make out of their life, they will use whatever nourishment they have to lay more eggs. They don't do anything else with the money, frankly. So how would anybody feel good about what they're accomplishing when the accomplishment is, I just made more people to drown in the sewer. I didn't fix the problem.
Altruists than the cost of reducing existential risk. Basically, Singer wants Bostrom and his likes to shut up because he's afraid people would just use long-termism.
So right, so why did you bring him up as a counter argument when all he's saying is shut up? He's not doing much better than that. He's not making an effective counter argument. Because frankly, the only effective counter argument is talked about why human beings need the future, why they need to do anything in the future, why there needs to be a future. All of those are the real questions.
As an excuse to stop donating to Africa without benefit to existential.
So, and again, donating to Africa in what form of donation? We should donate them what? Pen and pencil and teach them how to write a constitution? I mean, we can't even help ourselves now, right? Because we don't even, our constitution doesn't mean anything because we don't have Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Thomas Adams and Thomas Adams, whatever, Quincy. Yeah, John Adams. We don't have any of these people anymore. We don't have people with any integrity doing anything. So yeah, we're already in fucked. So how can we help them when we're fucked? And we're also fucked in the sense that we're importing a bunch of people who really aren't equipped to participate in civilization because they don't even want to become citizens.
Risk reduction. And that might work.
There's more benefits to not being a citizen. I mean, that's the world we actually have created now. For many people, it's a better choice.
Be true, but it's not a particularly convincing argument if the people you're dealing with have a net worth of several hundred billion dollars, or if their expected utility of existential risk reduction is that their institute gets more money.
So I guess their institute gets to get it by convincing people that the argument is sound, so, but whatever. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, the fact that people can be convinced to shove their money in you know, shitty pockets. Yeah, I don't know. It's unfortunate.
The argument is that it's kind of tragic if people die. He writes that long-termism overlooks what is really so tragic about premature death.
Okay, so yes, like there's something tragic about premature death, when in fact, in many cases, somebody's premature death is a huge benefit to other people. So that's also bullshit, right? I mean, some people were much better off. I mean, even people who lost their parents, I hate to say it, but, you know, it probably built character and made them more sensitive and more decent in how they live their life because of the fucking Holocaust they had to live through. Lots of people come out of trauma better than the person they would have been without it. Some of the worst days of my life are probably the ones that made me into a better human being, or a nicer human being, or a more caring human being. This is the fact, that those are the lessons you need to live, to learn in life. And Frank, so that's just the frank truth, is that this is another argument you can't win, that our premature death usually saves us from a much worse, otherwise death. And it's death itself that sucks. Premature, or whatever the alternative to premature is. Nature says so. Well, nature ain't too smart either. I mean, why should my death be decided by a bunch of other circumstances besides some sort of good reason? If I live, I should live for a good reason. If I die, I should die for a good reason. None of that exists in the world we have. And that world is one Peter Singer thinks makes sense too.
That it cuts short the lives of specific living persons whose plans and goals are thwarted. No shit. But then he goes on to...
Yeah, so no shit. So why are you quoting stuff you're going to say no shit to? Again, I don't think that's a very effective way to counter-argue, is to say no shit to the person making the counter-argument you're supporting. That doesn't seem very logical.
Make an important point. Just how bad the extinction of intelligent life on our planet would be depends crucially on how we value lives that have not yet begun and perhaps never will.
Right, so that's the antinatalist argument. So yeah, but what does that have to do with the fact that we live on a planet covered with sentient brains? And frankly, none of you can figure this part out. You can't figure out that the story is about what's happening to sentient feeling creatures that can experience what we would call a Holocaust or a tragedy or a bad day. And it matters. They're not just machines bumping into each other.
Begin. Yes, indeed. The entire argument for long-termism depends crucially on how much value you put on future lives.
No, that really isn't. Okay, it really isn't. But, you know, because you don't have to have too far a vision of the future to recognize that, yes, human beings aren't all going to not breed tomorrow. So there's going to be people in the future. Now, how long it takes to get human beings to say, I'm not going to be part of the problem, who's to say? Could be 100 years, could be 1,000 years, could be 10,000 years, could be 100,000 years, could be 1,000,000 years. Yes, could be lots of different numbers. and that future is still a future, and there's still payoffs in that future, because that future still will be much bigger than the present.
I'll say more about this in a minute, but first let's look at some other criticism. The cognitive scientist Steven Pinker,
a jerk and an idiot and a moron,
after reading McCaskill's What We Owe the Future, shared a similar reaction on Twitter, in which he complained.
No, he complains on Twitter. Well, isn't that great? This is where he has to go to say something, Twitter? And you're going to say something on a complex subject like this in 4 sentences on Twitter. Oh, well, he has to post a whole bunch of little tweets. That makes a lot of sense. Break it into pieces.
About certainty about matters on which we're ignorant, since the future...
All right, so there are some things that are certain that we could say we all know for certain. Well, humans 1,000 years from now, we'll still have 5 fingers. There's things that are pretty good guesses. And yeah, the question about when another nuclear bomb is going to go off, yeah, that's one of those really, who knows? It could be never, could be tomorrow. Tough. That one's tough to predict. So yeah, there's ones that you can answer and ones you can't answer. That's the dilemma we're in. And all of that has to be, raked through with, your best guesses. And that's all you can do. And that's all we've ever been able to do. And that's all we ever will do. Is make our best guesses.
Is the garden of exponentially forking paths, stipulating correct answers to unsolvable philosophical conundrums, and blithe confidence in tech advances.
Okay, whatever, this blithe confidence, blah, 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 there's no evidence that exists, but they're silly, the idea that they have silly delusions about what life is, what makes life fun. And the very fact that they're going to argue that 10,000 years from now, people will need to actually go to the Grand Canyon to see the Grand Canyon, well, that's pretty silly, right? We know they'll have a very good 3D illusion of the Grand Canyon by that time, and no one will actually need to go there and get bitten by a horsefly actually in Colorado. They won't have to actually go somewhere and actually smell the sewage or smell, they won't actually have to do any of this stuff, because it'll actually be recreatable in a synthetic way that's just as good as the real thing. So synthetics will take over and satisfy us, and we won't have to litter Wyoming.
Played out in the image.
And probably we won't give a fuck anyway. Because, frankly, our standards for entertainment will be much higher than watching a geyser shoot water into the air. That really won't be enough, okay, because we have been, we have been spoiled, okay, by the richness of the video and, the world that can, the fantasy world, the Lord of the Rings, blah, 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 all of that crap will have spoiled us. And, we can watch, a very good illusion of dragons and all kinds of stuff. Why would we be satisfied with, well, let's go watch a pencil tip over? Yeah, that might have entertained somebody 500 years ago, but it just ain't going to work today.
Imagination, that may never happen. The media also doesn't take kindly to long-termism.
Yeah, well, whatever. The media's Twitter, so fuck it. It's even worse. This whole, like I said, there's a real conversation. It's just being hatchet jobbed. And what's the point of that? They're all real subjects. I don't think there's any denying that somebody has to concede that the future deserves our attention. It would be just insane, benign neglect. It would be like child abuse to argue that the future doesn't need our care and feeding. Of course it does. It is as if it's a child we're raising. We are providing the platform the future has to stand on.
Some, like Singer, complain that long-termism draws followers away from the effective altruism movement. Others argue that the technocratic vision of long-termists is also...
All right, the technocratic part again. The fact is, though, that the technology to... again, carry you somewhere is stupid. The technology to bring the other stuff to you is the smart part. So it's almost like the argument can be made that the future should be delivery only. Nobody should actually go to a store and purchase something because it's so much more efficient to have the stuff in one location and drive it to somebody else's house. It's more efficient for the mailman to come to your house than it is for all the people to drive to the post office every day. I mean, that kind of logic can be figured out, and the future is going to have to be obedient to that kind of logic. So yes, the logic would be is that we will virtually create the world we need to live in. We don't need to actually fly to Mars. No point.
Anti-democratic. For example,
we don't need to feed human beings by having houses and castles and mansions and, you know, drawing rooms and reading rooms and farting rooms and all kinds of different rooms for everything we want to do. We don't need all that crap in the future because we can all just sit there with an iPad glued to our foreheads in a fucking little box and, you know, and live. We won't need to go anywhere or do anything. It'll all just be fed to us in a tube.
Magazine wrote that Elon Musk has sold the fantasy that faith in the combined power of technology and the market.
Yeah, the market, whatever that is, right? There's no, the market is a complete nonsense. It's just this huge fucking debt bubble. Okay, where 10, you know, where a million people are saying they're all entitled to, you know, a pie that is this big has to feed a billion people. Okay, it's a way oversold piece of territory, and it can never pay back what people think they paid into it. None of what you think they own. It's all fake. 99% fake pennies. You're not going to get anything back.
Could change the world without needing a role for the government. Christine Ember, in an opinion piece for the Washington Post, argued that the turn to long-termism appears to be a projection of a hubris common to those in tech and finance, based on an unwarranted confidence in its adherents' ability.
All right, so again, this whole idea that long-termism is one philosophy when it's clearly more than one philosophy, and clearly the people who say I'm a long-termist don't all agree with everything the other long-termists might say is their goal for the world. So this is it's way too complicated, and you're not going to make this as simple as Republican and Democrat. You're not going to be able to draw these lines and say, you know, these people are for capitalism and religious indoctrination. It's not going to be as clear as that.
To predict the future and shape it to their liking, and that long-termism seems tailor-made to allow tech, finance, and philosophy elites to indulge their anti-humanistic tendencies while patting themselves.
So anti-humanistic when they want to make more humans. I mean, just that's for it's kind of funny, but anyway. So humanistic, I guess they're meaning sensitive. I don't know, but even that's stupid. The fact is the future should be more efficient than it should be as efficient as possible. It should be as clean as possible. It should be as little disruption in its function, as few earthquakes as possible. If we had the ability to prevent future earthquakes, wouldn't we have an obligation to do it? I mean, duh.
On the back for their intelligence and superior IQs. The future becomes the clean.
So again, there's no evidence that any of this is superior IQ driven. Okay, so show me the chart that says any of these people even have a fucking. You're telling me that Elon Musk has a high IQ when he can't even figure out this whole fucking pressurized tunnel transport crap is crap? And he can't figure out that, no, he's never going to send somebody to Mars for $1,500? Shit.
Slate onto which long-termists can project their moral certitude and pursue their techno-utopian fantasies while flattering.
What a bunch of jargony. I mean, so what is that? What is this? All this jargon needs to be thrown in here? Why don't you just call them nihilist or Nietzscheans?
convincing themselves that
our Darwinist philosophy or something, you know. But to some extent, again, don't you have to draw a line somewhere? Again, if you placate a bunch of broken, you're going to get more broken.
They are still doing good. Okay, so now that we have seen what either side said.
So again, no, you didn't see what either side said. So you should have shown the far left loonies with their everybody's entitled to this and this and this and this, and everybody's entitled to have kids, and everybody's entitled to do this and entitled to do that, entitled, entitled, entitled. So why don't you just show all of these entitled people from the present who think they have a right to everything? Okay. somebody else should pay for my health care so I can eat all the potato chips I want, and you can, you know, stick tubes in me and do this and do that and give me all kinds of treatments and blah, 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 blah. And you should all pay for it.
As what are we to make of this? The logic of long-termists hinges on the question of what the value of a life in the future is.
Well, that's really easy to figure out. So this is the simplest question you could possibly ask. Yes, George Jetson of 1920 is worth just as much as George Jetson of 1944 and 2044 and 4044 and 10,044. Yes, it's a brain inside of a skull, and yes, the wealth, the value of its comfort is the same. Yes. All the Jets, all the Georges that'll live forever in any circumstance are all going to be, we're all rabbits, fuck. You don't sit there and say, how much is today's rabbit worth? How much is tomorrow's rabbit worth? How much is the Thursday's rabbit? No, no, no. You don't bother. They're all worth the same.
Compared to ours, while factoring in the uncertainty of this estimate, there are two elements which go into this evaluation. One is an uncertainty estimate for the future projection. The second is a moral value. It's how much future lives matter to you.
Right. So again, it's not about how much it matters to you. It's about how much it matters. So again, the comfort, I don't think the comfort of somebody 200 years ago somehow was less important than the comfort of me. Why would I be worth less or worth more than they were worth? Why would it be worth more for me to have a bunion or a broken leg or to have some misery? Why would it make any difference? It doesn't make any difference. Same thing. Human brain, you know, in world, trying to be happy. What's the difference? There's no difference.
Compared to ours, this moral value is not something you can calculate.
Yes, it is. It's overt. And one equals one. I mean, fuck. Two of them equals two of them. Four of them equals four of them. This isn't at all complicated. I don't even know how she can make this complicated. But these are the same people who eat meat, so you know what I'm saying? So they obviously do somehow think there's real feeling things and fake feeling things. So maybe she thinks the future people will be fake feeling things.
That's why long-termism is a philosophical stance, not a scientific one.
Oh, whatever, says you.
Long-termists try to sweep this under the rug by blinding the reader with numbers that look...
Oh, they're not blinding anybody with what? Blinding them with the truth. The truth is that it's a real fact that we are the foundation. And the foundation is more important than the penthouse, okay? I mean, it's just a fact that everything else is built on and depending on, you know, the person at the bottom holding up the pyramid, you know? I could do an acrobatic analogy. What's more important? What's more vital? Somebody falling off the top of the pyramid or somebody falling down at the bottom of the pyramid? Obviously, the bottom guy means it all falls down. You know, somebody falls off the top, it's only missing one little piece. Not as big a deal. Not as broken. All right? The present is the armature, the mechanics of the machine, okay? It's fundamental. If it's broken, then the future is in big trouble because it's going to have to fix that. It's going to have to fix what we break or what we don't fix.
Kind of sciency. To see how difficult these arguments are, it's useful to look at a thought experiment known as Pascal's mugging. Imagine you're in a
This is really stupid.
Dark alley. A stranger steps in front of you and says, Excuse me, I've forgotten my knife, but I'm a mugger, so please give me your wallet. Do you give him your money? Probably not. But then he offers to pay back double the money in your wallet next month. Do you give him your money?
Yeah, I probably do, just because he doesn't need a knife. You know, maybe he has some other weapons. He has a friend, who knows? But whatever. You know, if he's going to go to the trouble, I'll give him something for his trouble. All right, I'll give him a speech and a few bucks. So if he's in the mood to talk anyway, yeah, I'll talk.
Hell no, he's almost certainly lying. But what if he offers 100 times more, or 1,000,000 times?
Well, it doesn't matter. If it's 1,000,000 times a penny, so again, you're not making the argument that you're going to put up a penny for $1 trillion, right? So yeah, everybody's going to throw the penny in the wishing well. Big deal. All right, so, but we're not talking about a penny. We're talking about you're complaining because Holocaust is coming, or we are going to have to sacrifice a real finger. We're asking, you know, the futurist types are asking you to cut your finger off and sacrifice it to the future. So this isn't never going to be some small sacrifice. It's going to be a big sacrifice for an even bigger sacrifice. So you can't make it into a trivial. As soon as it's trivial, then the question is moot. Because you just say, who cares? I can afford to throw lots of pennies in lots of wells.
Going by economic logic, eventually the risk of losing your money because he might be lying becomes worth it, because you can't be sure.
I'm just saying, it's never going to be worth it if it's your house that you're living in. So if you have to sacrifice your house to this phony promise, I don't see anybody taking the deal. Because frankly, yeah, there's no prospect that it's really going to happen. People, you know, most logical people don't enter lotteries by saying, well, look, if we sell the house, I can buy 400,000 lottery tickets and my odds of winning could be 1 in 10 or something like that. Yeah, but it's still 90% of the time you're going to lose. So you're going to lose your house is the likelihood.
Sure, he's lying. Say you consider the chances of him being honest 1 in 10,000. If he offered to return you 100,000 times the amount of money in your wallet, the expected return would be larger than the expected loss. But most people...
There's no way this comes anywhere close to the subject. So I don't know what the point of this. This is also a dilemma in the sense that, yeah, there's always this balancing risk to reward. And the only way this could be relevant is if you claimed all the rewards were fake promises. Like it's a fake promise that we could cure malaria. That if we actually spent $10 billion, let's say we just spent the amount of money we wasted on that stupid redundant telescope. So we have a telescope that's basically taking exactly the same pictures we already have. Okay, a little better resolution, but nothing significant. All right, and we spent $10 billion. If we spent that $10 billion attempting to cure malaria, you know, prevent, create a vaccine or whatever, it's a huge payoff, a gigantic payoff in terms of restoring the dignity of, billions of human lives, millions anyway, hundreds of millions of human lives will be improved in the future. No doubt about it. It's a huge payoff. Are you advocating? No. You're basically arguing against. You're saying, why should we make the investment? There's a 1 in 10 chance it'll work. Well, that's pretty good odds, frankly. Considering how the stupid shit we invest in, it's a huge, gigantic. So let's end football, and let's end baseball, and let's take those billions of dollars and actually do something constructive with the money. Let's have a cure cancer contest. I mean, are you making any arguments about any of the dysfunction that exists in the present? I mean, can't you acknowledge that we're obsessed with a bunch of nonsense and that we're squandering resources on crap? You can't even say it? Well, that's because, yeah, you're making an income on crap spending. Black hole theory, or a dark matter, mathematics.
wouldn't use that logic. They wouldn't give the guy their money no matter what he promises. If you disagree, I have a friend who is a prince in Nigeria. If you send him $100...
Right, and we know that only works on people who are retarded or senile, so why even bring it up? It's not a real thing. Real people don't fall for it. Ugh, God. He's such a cheap shot artist. All right, so half the people, no doubt, watching her video probably more than half, buy lottery tickets. So she's making an argument about how silly that is, stupid, and, half your own audience is buying into bullshit. Hope.
He'll send back a billion. Just leave your email in the comments and we'll get in touch. The point of this thought experiment is that there's a second logical way to react to the mugger. Rather than to calculate the expected wins and losses, you note that if you agree to his terms on any value, then anyone can use the same strategy to take literally everything from you. Because so long as your risk assessment is finite, there's always that'll make the deal worth the risk. But in this case...
Whatever. So no, there's absolutely no comparison. And each one of these circumstances is an individual circumstance with different probabilities and likelihoods and different certainties that could be established. Different arguments could be made about likelihoods of outcomes. And some of them are unrefutable in the sense that buying your 1 in 6 million or 1 in 32 billion chance of winning lottery ticket is a pretty stupid investment.
You'd lose all your money and property and quite possibly also your life just because someone made a promise that's high enough. This doesn't make it...
So again, she's arguing that somehow we were promised and that there didn't have to come with the promise some sort of contract and some sort of explanation of why they're saying this will happen. So if somebody argues that it's going to be insanely expensive in terms of human grief, hardship, disruption of civilization because of global warming. Do you think that's not a legitimate argument? That somehow they don't have enough facts? I mean, fuck you. I mean, you can't play both sides of this, make your argument, and see if you can fool somebody with it. So I'm sure she can make arguments saying, yeah, well, it's pretty likely that this negative outcome is already in the book. We've already put the pan on the fire, and it's just about how hot it's going to get, not whether it's going to get hot or not. We've already lit the house on fire. The question is, will we do something to prevent the whole house from burning down?
Any sense? So it's reasonable to refuse giving money to the mugger. I'm sure you're glad to hear that. What's the relation to long-termism? In both cases, the problem is how to assign a probability to unlikely...
Okay, so again, there's no difficulty here. Each one of these variables that you could sit there and talk about, the likelihood of human extinction from asteroids and this and that, and you can go through all the different scenarios that are a threat to different aspects, okay? But the very idea of having surviving humans on planet Earth doesn't work out in the long run anyway, because eventually they will inevitably face an earthquake, the perfect earthquake, so to speak, okay, of the perfect storm kind of idea. You're going to have the perfect asteroid or comet or some other thing, and you will wipe out, half the population in some grisly manner. Should we prevent that day from happening? Well, how do you prevent that day from happening? Well, you have to prevent it by reducing the population that can endure it. That's how. That's the simplest way to prevent it, is to not have human beings standing on the Earth looking up, watching the comet coming for them.
Future events. For Pascal's mugger, that's the unlikely event that the mugger will actually do what he promised. For long-termism, the unlikely events are the existential threats.
Okay, so they're not unlikely. It's not unlikely that there will be events. Now, what specific one, okay? So this is like predicting your own death. It's pretty solid I'm going to die. Okay, now let's figure out what the probability of me dying all these different ways are. Well, who cares? The dying part's going to happen, okay? You're going to crash into... nature's wrath, so to speak, in the sense of nature's unreliability. I mean, there's an inevitable earthquake that will happen in the Mississippi Valley. It's going to be a huge earthquake. There's inevitable earthquakes going to hit Manhattan someday. You know, this whole, all these buildings built essentially on sand, all right? Forget it. I mean, the death toll is going to be astronomical. Well, whatever. It's going to be a big.
In both cases, our intuitive reaction is to entirely disregard them. Because if we didn't, the logical conclusion seems to be that we'd have to spend as much as we can on these unlikely...
Yeah, we haven't been on the Earth as a gigantic, huge population for very long. It's only a couple of hundred years, right? I mean, you go back, whatever, 400 years and you're down to like, what, 50 million or something. So there's a lot more at stake now. There's a lot more people on the fucking boat. All right, and we don't really have any lifeboat plan. We don't have any, you know, we got nothing. And we're heading for the icebergs. The future has them in it. And they're sort of, some of them are inevitable. They're over a time scale of 1,000 years. So it doesn't seem like that's relevant to me. But it's 1,000 years any time in the 1,000 years. So it could be tomorrow. The 1,000-year earthquake hits New York tomorrow. I mean, it can happen any time. And what, nobody should recognize that this is a problem? Of course we all should. Now, how much we invest in it? Well, who knows? There's not much we can do about earthquakes. But we can recognize that there's no real point in us keep buying the 20-year flood plan, right? There's no point in us building a house somewhere where there's a 20-year flood, right? Or a 50-year flood, because we know the house is going to last longer than 50 years. It might last 300 years. Why are we putting a house that can last 300 years in a floodplain that every 50 years wipes out houses? That's guaranteeing that you didn't build a 300-year house, you built a 50-year house. And we're doing a lot of that kind of unsustainable horseshit. Horseshit that can only lead to a disaster. So New York's population, you know, it's still increasing. It's reduced in terms of the amount of increase. The density is increasing. And there should be some sort of plan for when the disaster strikes, because it's inevitable.
Events about which we know the least. And this is basically why long-termists think that most people who are currently alive are expendable. However, when...
So again, this whole subject isn't even about reducing risk, right? Because the long-termists aren't really worried about catastrophic events in the near future or even in the long future. They're just worried about some notion of what the overall civilization will be preoccupied with. And they're just thinking about, I want to make sure I have 3D movies on my airplane. Well, my air car. They're not really grounded to any kind of real ideal about what human beings will be doing and how they'll do it. Because they can't even figure out that we've sort of maxed out. We're already at peak entertainment. We really can't go anywhere. Yeah. Once you've figured out orgy good, there's nowhere to go from that. All right, you're sort of peaked out in terms of figuring out what you're supposed to do with yourself. And we can't figure out how to do that for everyone. Everyone doesn't get orgy good.
You're arguing about the value of human lives. You're inevitably making a moral argument that can't be derived from logic alone.
Oh, bullshit. So anyway, all of it's logic-based, and logic often is, the logic tells you sometimes there's some things we can't predict when, but we know it's going to not be an if question. It is going to be a when. All right, so we can do a lot of that.
There's nothing irrational about saying you don't care about starving children in Africa. There's also nothing irrational about saying you don't care about people.
There's lots irrational about making a statement saying there's no reason to care. There's no reason to be concerned. There's brains in trouble. there's never any good reason to say that doesn't matter. So if anybody's saying it doesn't matter, or it's insignificant, or it's not an event that should be paid attention to, they're not being rational. Sorry, it is not rational to be indifferent to the welfare of a sentient brain. Never. Okay, yours is the question, right? If they can figure out they have some reason to care about whether they have a broken leg or whether they have a nail in their eye or whether they're on a gurney being tortured, well, as soon as you can do that, you can figure out that it matters if it's happening to somebody else. So it's just bullshit to say there's nothing irrational. There's everything irrational in glibism.
Who may or may not live on Mars in a billion years. It's a question of what your moral values are.
What a pile of crap, this moral value. Why are you even talking about moral values? What the fuck is a moral value? There's ethics and there's commodities, okay? And there's just your definition of what's a commodity, what has value. There's nothing about moral here. There's about what kind of logic are you applying to say something matters. And clearly, if you think your brain matters, only through fantastic fableism can you make up any story that says somebody else's brain doesn't.
Personally, I think it's good to have long-term strategies, not just for the next 10 or 20 years, but also for the next 10,000 or 10 billion years.
Well, you just made a video saying the exact opposite, so fuck you, hypocrite, duplicitous shit talker.
Yes. So I really appreciate the long-termists' focus on the prevention of existential risks. However, I also think they underestimate just how much technological progress depends on the reliability and sustainability of our current political, economic, and ecological systems.
Well, prove that they haven't mentioned any of those systems. Prove that they are not paying any attention to political and economic and all that crap. Because I'm sure they do. I'm sure that's why the guy's book is thick. He probably talks about all those other layers of crap infrastructure that have to be in place. And it's not just about getting to flying cars 10 years sooner than we would have.
Progress needs ideas, and ideas come from brains, which have to be fed both with food and with knowledge. So you know what, I would say grab a bag of chips and watch a few more videos.
Whatever the fuck that even, again, why? Why grab a bag of chips? Why don't you tell people to do something useful with, if you're going to sit there and give suggestions, you ought to say, grab something, grab the most nutritious snack you can to tolerate, all right? You know, have it as less shitty for you as possible, the least harmful snack possible. Find that one and eat that one.
If you like science without the gobbledygook, we have a newsletter that you can subscribe to on my...
Oh, I'm just so excited about that. Apparently that's the new... Everything old is new again. You know, so apparently that's the new racket, is to newsletter people so you can solicit more money out of them or something. I don't know. Just pathetic.
My website, sabinehossenfelder.com/newsletter.
Yeah, really great name. Sure. I mean, that's really easy to type. You couldn't just come up with an acronym for yourself, bitch.com, bitchy.
You can support us on Patreon, all right?
Us, yes, because I have people now, and we all need to make a living.
You're on YouTube just by clicking on the join button below. Special thanks.
Yeah, why would you do any of that? Why bother with Patreon? Why let Patreon take a percentage of the money? Why not just say... Why not just donate me some money? You don't need Patreon to do it. It's just another hand grabbing a percentage for no good reason, so you can show their icon. She's just doing a commercial for Patreon. She's probably getting paid by Patreon to do this, to put a commercial advertisement on the video.
Star Patreon supporters, especially those of you in tier 4 and higher. This channel would not be possible without your help. We now also have a gift store with tea.
It was possible without their help, so that's just a lie. And what she would be doing is probably something different, but it would still be videos. So again, you know. Just a fact. I'm sorry. Yeah, so the quality of the video would be degraded in some sense. You'd be wearing a T-shirt. Whatever.
Shirts and mugs and stuff. Go check it out.
Oh, and merch. I mean, that's just so tacky. I mean, that's like the tackiest of the tackiest of the tackiest kind of crap. What idiot wears fucking Sabine Hossifazer merch? It says Sabine Hossifazer on it. Who the fuck is wearing that T-shirt? Fuck.
Every little bit helps. Thanks for...
Yeah, why don't you just ask for the little bit? Why waste 90%, right? So not like, what, 85% of the revenue on merch goes to merch making? I mean, it's just stupid. Way overvalued. You know, a $2 T-shirt sold for $32. What the fuck? Why would you encourage people to be that stupid? Oh, God, people are just so fucked up.
Watching. See you next week.
Too bad. Anyway, whatever. Her green screen isn't even perfect. It's got lots of little edgies on it. But anyway, she should be able to afford better. Yeah. Okay. All right, so that's video number two. So there should be like two more, but I'll do her arguing against Elon Musk's increased population theory, because that really is stupid for so many obvious reasons. I mean, I wonder how much time Elon Musk in his life has spent with his children. Like actual hours. Four. Yeah. Oh, it's just pathetic. Have more kids and neglect them like I do. You know, you hire people to take care of that. You know, clean up the vomit and such. Alright, anyway. Fuck. I just hate this planet. Hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it, hate it. Earth sucks. Okay. So anyway, so does Google. So does Musk, and so does everything. And boy, I'm just so sick of it. But I must endeavor to persevere. So that's the only way you prevent the suck in the future, is to somehow unsuck it now. That's what I'll try to do. Anti-suck. But anyway, till the next time, such. DoNotGod.com video presentation.